Chapter 9. Imam Jawad alayhi salam, the Imam of Generosity. This chapter reviews the life of Imam Jawad alayhi salam and provides an overview of his social, scientific, and political achievements. It also highlights the unique aspect of the imamat of Imam Jawad, which was that his imamat was at a very young age. During the government of Amin. Birth. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali alayhi salam, also known as Jawad or Taqi, was born on the 15th of Ramadan in the year 195 Hijri in Medina. He was given the title of Abu Ja'far by his father Imam Ridha alayhi salam, which was originally the title of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. To distinguish him from Imam Baqir, he would also be called Abu Ja'far al-Thani, or the second Abu Ja'far. He was the only child of Imam Ridha. His mother was Lady Sabiqa, who before marrying Imam Ridha was a slave. Similar to Najme Khatun, the mother of Imam Ridha, Lady Sabiqa was also originally from an area in Africa that is between modern-day Egypt and Sudan. She belonged to the same tribe as Maria al-Qibtiya, the Prophet's wife and the mother of Ibrahim, who passed away in early childhood during the life of the Prophet. To purge bad memories from the period of her captivity, Imam Ridha also called her by the name of Khayzuran. She was unique in piety among the other women of her time. She had such a great status that years earlier, before Imam Kadhim's imprisonment, Imam Kadhim had asked someone to pass his greetings to her. Difficulties of late fatherhood. Imam Jawad was born when his father Imam Ridha was 46 years old, when 12 years had passed from the start of Imam Ridha's imamat. During these 12 years, many doubted if Imam Ridha was the true imam of the time, as he did not have a son to inherit the imamat. Among the skeptics were the Waqifi Shias, who did not believe in the imamat of Imam Ridha and were looking for any excuse to challenge his imamat. Imam Ridha was patient with the accusations against him. He would confidently respond with a prophecy that God would certainly bless him with a son who will inherit the imamat after him. Even after Imam Ridha's prophecy became a reality and Imam Jawad was born, the accusations against him did not stop. Some doubted and spread rumors that Imam Jawad was not really Imam Ridha's son. This went so far that even some of the Imam's close relatives were also influenced by the rumors. They came to the Imam and questioned Imam Jawad's darker complexion, which was rare in the family. They asked the Imam to allow them to bring some experts who could confirm that Imam Ridha was the biological father of Imam Jawad by matching their faces and body gestures. Due to their insistence, the Imam finally agreed. The experts came and verified that Imam Ridha was indeed Imam Jawad's biological father. Honorable childhood. Imam Jawad's birth brought great joy to Imam Ridha and his family. This was not only because Imam Ridha had become a father at an old age, but also because it verified his imamate. The Shia community gained trust and confidence in their belief in the imamate of Imam Ridha, as he now had a son to become his successor. Imam Ridha described Imam Jawad as a newborn, more auspicious and blessed for the Shias than any other newborns. The Imam would stand by Imam Jawad's cradle and speak to him in private for a long time. When Imam Ridha was asked about their conversation, he responded that he was giving his son the benefits of his knowledge. Imam Ridha had frequently introduced Imam Jawad as his successor in the imamate to his companions and representatives, despite Imam Jawad's very young age. Once, one of Imam Ridha's companions asked him who he should refer to after the imam. Imam Ridha revealed Imam Jawad as his successor. The companion reacted with surprise at Imam Jawad's very young age, who was just 3 years old. Imam Ridha responded that age is not a limitation for the imamate. Imam Ridha then continued with the example of Prophet Jesus from the Quran, who began his prophethood as a newborn. Imam Ridha had special honor and respect for his only child, Imam Jawad. He would always call Imam Jawad by his title of Abu Ja'far instead of his original name, Muhammad, which in Arabic culture shows respect. Also, when Imam Ridha traveled to Merv, he would address Imam Jawad with his title of Abu Ja'far in his letters. Imam Jawad was also very attached to his beloved father. Before Imam Ridha was taken to Merv, he had taken Imam Jawad to Mecca for pilgrimage. The Imam at such a young age had realized that his father was performing his farewell prayers around the Kaaba, as if it were his last visit. Imam Jawad was extremely saddened and did not move from his place until Imam Ridha asked him to do so. During the government of Ma'mun. Ma'mun in power. After multiple battles that took place over a course of more than 2 years, Ma'mun was finally able to defeat and kill his brother Amin. With Amin's death, Ma'mun officially became the only Abbasid caliph. Instead of returning to the original Abbasid capital of Baghdad, Ma'mun decided to stay in Merv, present-day Mary, in Turkmenistan, and made it the capital of his government. However, his government was unstable, and various uprisings and riots threatened his power. The main threat to his government was led by the Alawites, who viewed the Abbasids as an illegitimate government from its very beginning. The term Alawites refers to the children of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which also include the Prophet's descendants from his daughter Lady Fatima salamullah alayha. The Alawid uprisings were initiated in Kufa by one of the descendants of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, known as Ibn Tabataba. The uprising in Kufa quickly spread to other cities, including Mecca, Medina, Yemen, Basra, Mada'in, and Ahwaz, and became a serious threat for Ma'mun's newly established government. After around 10 challenging months, Ma'mun was finally able to defeat these widespread uprisings. Ma'mun's plot for Imam Rida. Although Ma'mun was able to defeat the widespread Alawid uprisings, he could not put an end to the long years of conflict between the Alawids and the Abbasids. Thus, Ma'mun, who is known as the most strategic caliph among the other Abbasid caliphs, decided to find an innovative solution to deal with the potential threat of the Alawids. He decided to associate the Alawids with his government. He chose Imam Rida for his plot, who was the most well-known character among the Alawids. Imam Rida was famous among the Muslims for his divine knowledge due to years of scientific work and contributions in Medina. Imam Rida was also the spiritual leader and the Imam for Shia Muslims. To implement his plot, Ma'mun sent invitations and insisted that the Imam travel to Merv and meet him. The Imam rejected all of Ma'mun's invitations, but could not change his decision. Finally, Ma'mun sent military delegates to Medina to bring the Imam to Merv. Imam Rida realized that Ma'mun would not stop and was finally forced to travel to Merv along with Ma'mun's delegates. Before leaving Medina, Imam Rida held the hand of his beloved 5-year-old son, Imam Jawad, and visited the tomb of the Holy Prophet. He sought the Prophet's protection for his son. Imam Rida then asked his companions and representatives to obey Imam Jawad and revealed him as his successor to the Imamate. Imam Rida in Merv. After Imam Rida was brought to Merv, Ma'mun finally informed the Imam about his real intentions. Over a course of about 2 months, there were multiple discussions between Ma'mun and the Imam about having the Imam take a role in the government. The Imam rejected all of Ma'mun's offers. Eventually, Ma'mun lost his patience and threatened to kill the Imam. It was then that the Imam accepted Ma'mun's offer to be the crown prince with certain conditions. The Imam emphasized that his role would only be to observe governmental affairs from a distance and serve strictly as a consultant. With these conditions, the Imam prohibited Ma'mun from making any governmental decision using the Imam's name or influence on the hearts of the people. Part of Ma'mun's plot in bringing Imam Rida to Merv was to isolate him from the people and his Shia followers. Thus, Ma'mun put the Imam's life under intense surveillance. A year after the Imam's arrival in Merv, Ma'mun proposed that his daughter Habib marry Imam Rida and insisted that the Imam marry her. Through this marriage, Ma'mun was able to monitor all aspects of the Imam's private life. Furthermore, Ma'mun, who knew that Imam Rida already had a beloved son, decided to promise his other daughter Fazl to Imam Jawad, while both Imam Jawad and Fazl were very young. He made this decision in Imam Jawad's absence, whom he had never even met. When Imam Rida was in Merv, he missed his beloved son
and communicated with him through letters.
In one letter, Imam Ridha advised Imam Jawad to use the main entrance of his house, despite the opinion of his caretakers. They wanted Imam Jawad to use the other door of the house to avoid any contact between him and the needy, who would wait in front of the main entrance of Imam's house in hopes of receiving charity. In the letter, Imam Ridha also specified a minimum amount of charity for Imam Jawad in his donations. With this advice, Imam Ridha wanted the title of Jawad, which means generous, to shine in his son's character. Thus, Imam Jawad was well known for his generosity even before his imamat. Martyrdom of Imam Ridha. As time passed, Ma'mun realized that his plots against Imam Ridha were ineffective. Also, the situation in Baghdad, the capital of the Abbasids, was unstable and out of control. The Abbasid royal family was outraged by Ma'mun's decision to appoint Imam Ridha as his crown prince. They could not tolerate seeing the future of the Abbasid government fall into the Alawid lineage. They selected Ibrahim ibn Mahdi, one of their family members, as their chosen caliph, and they all paid allegiance to him. Thus, Ma'mun decided to personally move to Baghdad to handle the instability in the city. He knew that the Abbasids would never approve Imam Ridha as his crown prince. Ma'mun believed that the Abbasids would still accept him as their caliph if he could eliminate their objection by killing Imam Ridha. Ma'mun wanted to prepare a favorable environment in Baghdad ahead of his arrival. Therefore, he decided to eliminate Imam Ridha as soon as possible. On their way to Baghdad, Ma'mun and his army stopped by his father Harun's tomb, which was in a garden near the city of Tus in Khorasan. Here, Ma'mun called the Imam to his presence and poisoned him. Thus, Imam Ridha became the only Shia Imam directly poisoned by the hand of a Muslim caliph. He was martyred after being Ma'mun's crown prince for only about a year and a half. When Imam Ridha was on his deathbed, Ma'mun came to visit him. He told the Imam that he did not know which tragedy was harder for him, losing the Imam or the people's accusations that he was responsible for the Imam's condition. The Imam ignored Ma'mun's words. He only opened his eyes and told Ma'mun to treat his son, Imam Jawad, well. The Imam warned him with a prophecy that both of them would die in a short period from each other. During the last hours of Imam Ridha's life, his companion Abbas al-Tihrawi saw a young boy inside the Imam's residence. He asked the boy how he had entered the house, as he had closed all of the entrance doors, because Imam Ridha was sick and could not meet anyone. The boy responded that the Almighty, who had brought him from Medina to Tus in just a moment, had gotten him into the house through the closed door. Abbas Alt asked him who he was, and the boy responded that he was his Imam, Muhammad ibn Ali, Imam Jawad. He said that he was there to meet and bid farewell to his lonely and poisoned father. When Imam Ridha saw his 7.5-year-old son, he got up and hugged him. They talked in private for a while, until the Imam's soul ascended to the heavens. Imam Jawad then performed his father's rituals alone. He washed and prayed over the Imam's body, and then disappeared without anyone else noticing his presence. Beginning of Imamat. After the martyrdom of Imam Rida, Imam Jawad publicly declared his Imamat in Medina. He came to the mosque of the Prophet, stepped on the Prophet's pulpit, and addressed the people. He introduced himself and told the people that he is the one with divine knowledge. In the beginning of Imam Jawad's Imamat, there was great confusion among the Shias about his eligibility for the Imamat. Undoubtedly, Imam Rida had only one child to inherit the Imamat from him. However, it was difficult for some Shias to accept the Imamat of a 7.5-year-old boy who was much younger than the Islamic pubertal age of 15. This confusion caused some divisions among the Shia community. Some referred to the Waqifis or Zaydis, and some others sought their Imam from among the brothers of Imam Rida. Furthermore, those who were against Shia theology found a great opportunity to mock the Shia belief in the Imamat of a young boy. The confusion in recognizing the Imam of the time was not limited to ordinary Shia followers, but also included some Shia elders who doubted the Imamat of Imam Jawad. When the news of Imam Rida's martyrdom reached Baghdad, the Shia elders and scholars held a meeting in their house to discuss the next Imam. In this meeting, one of the elders suggested taking care of Imam Jawad until he aged and could take leadership of the Shia community. His suggestion received a strong reaction by another elder, who responded that if the Imamat is granted by God to even a one-day-old child, his knowledge is superior than an old scholar's. And if it is not granted by God, then even a 1,000-year-old person would have the same knowledge as an ordinary person. This latter opinion was approved by the other Shia elders. However, they decided to visit Medina and personally investigate the true Imam of the time. After a few months, the Hajj season arrived. The Shias, particularly about 80 of their elders and scholars, stopped by Medina during their travel to perform Hajj. In their gathering in Medina, Abdullah, one of the brothers of Imam Rida, came and someone from the audience told them to ask him questions as their Imam. However, some of the scholars challenged his Imamat. They told the others that we have received narrations from Imam Baqir alayhi salam and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that it is impossible for two brothers to become an Imam except in the case of Imam Hassan alayhi salam and Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Ever since the time of Imam Baqir, the Shias knew that the Imam of the time must have divine knowledge and that they could verify his Imamat with their questions. Hence, they decided to verify Abdullah's knowledge by asking him some questions. However, he was not able to respond. His answers caused great disappointment to the audience, and they decided to leave the meeting. They said amongst themselves that they wished Imam Rida's son was older so that they were needless of someone like Abdullah. At this time, Imam Jawad entered the gathering. He addressed his uncle, Abdullah, and warned him about how difficult his situation would be in the hereafter in front of God. Imam Jawad told him that God will question him about his ruling, fatwa, over something that he did not have knowledge about, while someone more knowledgeable than him was present among the Muslims. The audience then repeated their questions, and Imam Jawad provided them with correct and convincing answers according to the teachings of the Prophet and the previous Imams. The Imam's answers delighted and satisfied the audience.
During their stay in Medina, the Shias asked many questions from Imam Javad.
The number of questions that they asked were estimated to be in thousands. For many of the questions, the Imam provided short answers or responded in advance, even before the question had completed. This in itself was a miracle and validated the fact that the Imam held the knowledge of the unseen. Once the Shias verified Imam Javad's divine knowledge, they began to have faith in his imamate. They did not have any doubt that the Imam's knowledge was given to him directly by God, and the Imam could not have obtained his knowledge through education due to his very young age. Thus, many Shias who had been attracted to the other sects such as the Waqifis also returned to accept Imam Javad's imamate. Thus, the majority of Imam Rida's Shia followers also followed Imam Javad as their next imam. However, out of curiosity, they frequently questioned Imam Javad about his imamate at such a young age. The imam would respond in various ways. Once, the imam told them about the story of Prophet Solomon, about when his father, Prophet David, appointed him as his successor while he was just a young boy. The elders and the scholars of the Israelites initially rejected his decision, but God provided them with a miracle to prove his selection for them. On another occasion, the Imam told them that God has repeated in the imamate what he had chosen for the prophethood in the past. The Imam then reminded them about the prophethood of Prophet John at a young age by referring to the following verse of the Quran. Chapter 19, verse 12. We granted him, John, wisdom while yet a child. Prophet Jesus is another example who announced his prophethood as a newborn, as mentioned in the following verse of the Quran. Chapter 19, verse 30. He, Jesus, said, "Verily, I am God's servant. He has granted me the book and has made me a prophet." On another occasion, the Imam clarified that the invitation to God is not dependent on the age of he who invites. He referred to the following verse of the Quran, chapter 12, verse 108. Say, "This is my way. I invite to God based on clear knowledge, I and whoever follows me." The Imam then reminded them about Imam Ali as the first male to follow Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in his invitation to God while he was just 9 years old. Ma'mun's plot for Imam Javad. After the martyrdom of Imam Rida, Ma'mun and his troops returned to the Abbasid capital of Baghdad and were able to bring the city under their control. Ma'mun also changed the color of his outfit from green to black, which represented the Abbasids. With this decision, Ma'mun wanted the Abbasids' trust and loyalty, and to assure them that the caliphate would stay in their family. Previously, when Ma'mun had selected Imam Rida as his crown prince, he had asked his governmental officials to wear green outfits to entice the Alawite support. Although Ma'mun had concealed his direct role in Imam Rida's poisoning and martyrdom, he was held responsible by the public as soon as the Imam was poisoned. When the Imam was on his deathbed, Ma'mun came to visit him. He told the Imam that he did not know which tragedy is harder for him, losing the Imam or the people's accusation that he was responsible for the Imam's condition. To portray his innocence, Ma'mun showed great sorrow and grief immediately after Imam Ridha's martyrdom and during his burial. However, it became apparent to the people, especially for the Shias, that Ma'mun was in fact the one who had murdered the Imam. Ma'mun had brought Imam Ridha to Merv and appointed him as his crown prince to peacefully remove the threat of the Alawid uprisings against his government. He was now afraid that his role in Imam Ridha's martyrdom might trigger the Alawids into initiating military action against him. Thus, he decided to find a peaceful solution for this problem. He wanted to portray to the public that he still held as good a relationship with the Alawids as before. Thus, about a year after martyrdom of Imam Ridha, Ma'mun decided to pursue his initial plan of marrying his daughter, Fazl, to Imam Jawad. He had promised Fazl to Imam Jawad around 2 years earlier in Merv during Imam Jawad's absence. By this time, the Shias had verified Imam Jawad's divine knowledge and had accepted his imamat. Thus, Ma'mun knew that Imam Jawad had the same status in the eyes of the Shias as his father, Imam Ridha. The elevated status of Imam Ridha had led Ma'mun to select the Imam as his crown prince. This political marriage was a peaceful sign to portray to the people that the two families, the Alawids and the Abbasids, were united and had strong ties. Ma'mun had thought that this marriage could have multiple other benefits for him as well. He could closely monitor the Imam's activities, especially his communications with the Shia leaders and representatives. Also, the young Imam would be affiliated with the Abbasid royal family and he would be prone to sinful behavior that they would indulge in. In such a situation, the Imam's holy character would be damaged in the eyes of the Muslims, particularly his Shia followers. The Imam in Baghdad. To implement his decision, Ma'mun sent a letter to Imam Jawad in Medina and invited him to Baghdad. Prior to his meeting with Ma'mun, the Imam coincidentally encountered Ma'mun in the streets of Baghdad while Ma'mun was going hunting with his troops. The people in the streets ran in fear of Ma'mun's troops. However, Imam Jawad, as young as he was, remained in the street unafraid of Ma'mun's troops. The Imam's calmness attracted Ma'mun's attention. He approached the Imam and asked him why he did not run away like the others. The Imam responded, "O Caliph, the road is not narrow, which would require me to open it up for you. I have also not committed any guilt or mistake to run away from you, and I don't think that you would prosecute anyone without a guilt." Ma'mun was shocked by the Imam's confidence and wise response, and asked for his name. The Imam introduced himself, and this was the first time that Ma'mun met the Imam. After a short conversation, Ma'mun left to go hunting. On his way back to the palace, he met the Imam again. He asked the Imam if he knew what he had hunted today. The Imam then told Ma'mun about his special hunt, proving to him that he held divine knowledge like his father Imam Ridha. Ma'mun then brought the Imam to his palace with respect. Now, He was even more determined to pursue his plan to marry his daughter, Umm Fazl, to Imam Javad. The Imam's Islamic Marriage. The Abbasid royal family became worried when they heard about Ma'mun's decision to marry his daughter to Imam Javad. They feared that Ma'mun would eventually choose Imam Javad as his crown prince, similar to how he chose Imam Javad's father, Imam Ridha, in the past. They did not want to lose their power and influence in the future government. They came to Ma'mun to object and tried to convince him to revert his decision. In their discussion, they told Ma'mun that Imam Javad was still a child and lacked knowledge and maturity for marriage. They asked Ma'mun to wait at least until Imam Javad grew up and learned Islamic teachings. Ma'mun responded that Imam Javad belongs to a family whose knowledge is given by God. Ma'mun knew this as he had tested Imam Ridha's knowledge in Merv by setting up multiple debates between him and the top scholars of the time. He had also witnessed Imam Javad's divine knowledge when he had met him for the first time on the streets of Baghdad. However, he allowed the Abbasids to set up a scientific debate to test Imam Javad's knowledge and verify his claim. The Abbasids' royal family accepted Ma'mun's challenge. They asked Yahya ibn Akhtham, the chief justice of Baghdad, to debate with Imam Javad. They promised him a great reward if he could overcome Imam Javad in the debate. Ma'mun held a grand event where the people, the top scholars, and officials attended. In this event, Yahya asked for Ma'mun's permission to begin the debate. He then asked the Imam about the Islamic ruling for someone who has hunted while he is in the state of ihram or in Hajj garment. The Imam responded by asking him to specify the conditions under which the hunting had taken place, as this influenced the ruling. The Imam asked him if the hunting had happened intentionally or by mistake, whether the person knew the relevant Islamic law or not, whether the location of the hunt was inside the holy site or not, whether the person was free or a slave, whether the hunt had happened at night or during the day, and whether the person was performing Hajj or Umrah. The Imam mentioned 11 different conditions that would influence the ruling. Yahya became greatly shocked by the young Imam's response and could not continue debating with the Imam, as he did not know that this single question could have various answers depending on the relevant conditions. Furthermore, the Imam's response demonstrated his full knowledge about all aspects of the Islamic law regarding this question. Ma'mun, who witnessed Yahya's inability to continue debating with the Imam, told the Abbasids that they now have realized what he had told them before about the Imam's knowledge. He then told the Imam that he had selected him as his son-in-law and asked the Imam to recite the Islamic marriage contract. The Imam accepted this political marriage as it was enforced by the Muslim caliph, and his refusal could have negative consequences for himself and the Shia community.
The Imam set the mahriya, dower, of Umm Fadl
equal to the amount of mahriya of his great-grandmother, Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, in her marriage to Imam Ali, alayhi salam. After reciting the marriage contract, Ma'mun held a ceremony, distributing gifts among the audience, and arranged a feast for the people. At the end of the ceremony, the people dispersed, and only the close officials of the government stayed in the palace. Ma'mun asked the Imam to provide the answer to the question raised by Yahya ibn Akhtham regarding hunting. The Imam then explained the Islamic law about all various conditions under which the hunt might have occurred. He provided answers for each condition that he had presented to Yahya. The Imam's response resulted in Ma'mun's applause and admiration. Ma'mun then suggested to the Imam to ask Yahya ibn Akhtham a question in return. The Imam asked Yahya how a man and a woman could be Islamically unlawful to each other early in the morning and then lawful before the noon, then become unlawful to each other at noon and then lawful in the afternoon, then become unlawful to each other at sunset and then lawful in the evening, then become unlawful at midnight
and then lawful at dawn.
Yahya swore by God that he did not know the answer and asked the Imam to shed light. The Imam then provided him with a comprehensive answer. Ma'mun then asked the Abbasid royal family if they could provide such a concise answer to either of the questions raised by the Imam or Yahya. They then admitted to having limited knowledge and that Ma'mun knew better about the status of Imam Jawad than they did. Ma'mun then ended the meeting by highly praising the Imam. The Imam's stay in Baghdad. The Imam was the leader of the Shia community. He used every opportunity to defend the principles of the Shia belief. During the Imam's brief stay in Baghdad, Yahya ibn Akhtham, who had been defeated in his previous debate with the Imam, tried to challenge him with a critical question about the Shia belief against the first and the second caliphs. He asked the Imam's opinion about a fabricated narration stating that Angel Gabriel came to the Prophet and told him that God says that he is pleased with the first caliph and asked the Prophet to ask the first caliph if he is also pleased with God. The Imam responded that the Prophet told the Muslims in his last Hajj that many will attribute lies to him after his death. The Prophet advised the Muslims to validate any narration attributed to him with the Quran and his tradition. The Imam then told Yahya that this narration was not valid as it was against the Quran by referring to the following verse, chapter 50, verse 16. Surely we have created man and we know the promptings of his heart, and we are nearer to him than even his jugular vein. The Imam questioned how it was possible that God did not know the first caliph's opinion about himself and needed to ask the Prophet. Yahya did not give up and asked the Imam's opinion about another narration attributed to the Prophet, which states that the first and the second caliphs on the earth are like the angels Gabriel and Mikael in heaven. The Imam responded that the angels Gabriel and Mikael were never infidels, nor ever disobeyed God by committing even a single sin. The Imam then challenged this unequal comparison and said
that the first and the second caliphs were infidels before converting to Islam and spent most of their lives in infidelity to God.
Yahya then asked the Imam's opinion about another narration attributed to the Prophet, which states that the first and the second caliphs are the leaders of the elders in paradise. The Imam responded that all of the people in paradise will be young, and no elderly person will be found. The Imam then said, "This narration was fabricated by the Umayyads to belittle the Prophet's narration that Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are the leaders of the youth in paradise." Yahya continued and stated another fabricated narration in which the Prophet had said, "If I was not selected for the prophethood, indeed the second caliph would have been selected instead." The Imam rejected this false narration by referring to the following verse of the Quran, chapter 33, verse 7. "Recall, O Prophet, that we received a pledge from the prophets and from you and from Noah and Abraham and Moses and Jesus, son of Mary. We received from them a solemn pledge." The Imam then said that God had taken a pledge from the prophets for their prophethood, so how could he change his covenant? He questioned Yahya that none of the prophets became an infidel for even a single moment in their life.
So how could it be possible for God to select someone as his prophet who had spent the majority of his life in infidelity?
Yahya continued and stated yet another fabricated narration, where the Prophet had said that if God sends his punishment, no one would be spared other than the second caliph. The Imam rejected this narration by referring to the following verse of the Quran, chapter 8, verse 33. "But God would not punish them while you, the Prophet, are amongst them, and God would not punish them as long as they seek forgiveness." The Imam then denied the authenticity of this narration. This debate came to an end with the Imam achieving his goals without sparking any controversy on this sensitive subject. After a short stay in Baghdad and his marriage to Umm Fadl, the Imam returned to Medina alone. Imam Jawad and Umm Fadl were both too young to live with each other, and their marriage was only limited to recitation of the Islamic marriage contract. The Imam's divine character. The Imam was the only source of true Islam, and his piety and divine character was observed by all those who interacted with him. The Imam had multiple elevated titles, such as Jawad, which means generous, and Taqi, which means pious. There are also some prayers and supplications narrated from the Imam. Among them is a special prayer recommended to be recited on the first day of the lunar month for guaranteeing health during the upcoming month. Also, there is a supplication from the Imam specific for the month of Ramadan. Another well-known supplication narrated from the Imam is known as Hirde Jawad, which is recommended to be carried as an amulet for protection. The Imam's scientific contribution. The Imam was the true source of divine knowledge in Islamic society. He was referred to by many to answer questions regarding various aspects of Islamic sciences. The names of 193 individuals who had narrated hadith from the Imam are still available. The Imam had also trained multiple notable scholars. These scholars had a special role in preserving and spreading the Imam's narrations. They were not only scholars in the Islamic knowledge, but were also unique in piety and character. Ali ibn Mahziyar was one of the Imam's notable companions who was also his representative in Ahvaz. He was a great scholar of Islamic law. He authored 33 books on various topics in Islamic law and belief. Multiple letters of communication between him and the Imam are recorded in history. These letters show his special status and respect in the eyes of Imam Javad. The Imam frequently expressed his satisfaction and approval for Ali ibn Mahziyar and prayed for him. Fazl ibn Shazan was another great companion of Imam Javad. He was a master in various Islamic fields, such as the Islamic law and ilm al-kalam, which is the study of Islamic doctrine for defending Islamic principles against skeptics. He had authored dozens of books on various topics, such as defending the Shia belief and falsifying the claims of other sects and theologies. Abdul Azim al-Hasani, who was from the descendants of Imam Hassan, was another notable companion of Imam Javad. A few of the Imam's companions were also among the 18 companions of Ashab-e-Ijma, or the Companions of the Consensus, whose narrations are currently regarded in the seminaries with the highest level of trust. Safwan ibn Yahya was one of the companions of Ashab-e-Ijma, who authored around 30 books, 11 of which have survived until today. He had narrated hundreds of hadith from the Shia Imams, including Imam Javad. Ma'mun had realized that Imam Javad belonged to a family that was blessed with divine knowledge. He had tested Imam Ridha's knowledge in Merv by holding multiple debate sessions between him and the top Islamic and non-Islamic scholars of the time. Ma'mun had realized that he could not defeat Imam Ridha in any scientific debate. Instead, the news of Imam's victory in the debates had spread across the Islamic territory and had led to even more popularity and respect for the Imam. Ma'mun also verified Imam Jawad's knowledge in his first meeting with him on the streets of Baghdad. He later witnessed the Imam's knowledge in responding to the questions raised by Yahya ibn Aksam, the Chief Justice of Baghdad. Thus, Ma'mun did not attempt to challenge Imam Jawad's knowledge in public debates, unlike what he did to Imam Ridha in the past. Instead, he had to find a way to distract the Muslims from the Imam and his divine knowledge. He had established a good relationship with the neighboring countries as a policy to overcome the internal problems in his government, such as the war with Amin and the Alawid uprisings. Thus, he ordered the extensive translation of foreign literature, such as Greek philosophy, into Arabic. He then spread the translations among the Muslims in hopes of distracting them from the Imam's knowledge. The Imam's wedding ceremony. Although Imam Javad was the son-in-law of the Caliph, he was completely indifferent to this material world. After resigning the marriage contract to Umm Fazl, the Imam did not stay long in Baghdad and returned to Medina alone. He continued his role in Medina as the divine Shia leader. While in Medina, before his official wedding ceremony to Umm Fazl in Iraq, the Imam married a slave girl named Samane. The Imam's marriage to a slave was a practical lesson in the equality of the people in the eyes of the Imam, as he regarded the Caliph's daughter and a slave with equal esteem. It was also a clear message that his marriage to Umm Fazl was in fact a political marriage due to the circumstances that Imam was living in. After around 11 years from the time of the marriage contract to Umm Fazl, the Imam was brought to Baghdad for his official wedding ceremony. At this time, Imam Jawad's oldest son, Imam Hadi, had been born to his wife Samaneh in Medina and was 2 years old. Prior to the Imam's arrival in Baghdad, Ma'mun had already left Baghdad towards current-day Turkey to personally manage the instability in that region. The Imam was then taken to Ma'mun. The Imam met Ma'mun at Tikrit, a city in northern Iraq, and his wedding ceremony to Umm Fazl was officially held there. Ma'mun would always portray that he was proud of the Imam and treated him respectfully. However, on multiple occasions, he attempted to force the Imam into sinful behavior that he and the other Abbasid royal family members would indulge in. His intention was to defame the Imam and his infallibility in the eyes of the Muslims. During the Imam's wedding ceremony, Ma'mun prepared beautiful slave girls with precious jewels in their hands and sent them towards the Imam to accompany him when he was walking towards the stage. However, the Imam was completely indifferent to them. On another occasion, a singer told Ma'mun that he could influence the Imam's heart towards sin and fulfill Ma'mun's ill intentions. He approached the Imam, sat in front of him, and started singing with his musical instrument. The people gathered around the singer to enjoy his performance. However, the Imam looked at the singer and loudly addressed him. "Oh, long-bearded one, fear God!" Suddenly, his hand froze, the instrument fell, and he could not continue his performance. With this political marriage, the Imam became affiliated to the Abbasid royal family and was required to meet them. Even with this affiliation, his lifestyle was quite simple, and his interaction with the people was as usual. The Imam showed his detachment from this material world in his everyday practice. Once, one of the Imam's companions saw the Imam in the palace and thought to himself that the Imam would never want to leave the palace and return to Medina. At this time, the Imam addressed him and told him that a simple meal made of bread and salt near the Prophet's tomb is more pleasant for him than what he sees here in the palace. After the wedding, the Imam stayed in Baghdad for several months until the upcoming Hajj season. He then left Baghdad with Umm Fazl towards Mecca to perform Hajj. After performing Hajj, they returned to Medina and stayed there for the rest of Ma'mun's government for about 2.5 years. The Imam's leadership. To meet the needs of the growing Shia community, Imam Sadiq had established a networking organization of his trusted companions as his representatives in various cities around the Islamic territory.
This organization was further developed during the imamate of Imam Kadhim and Imam Ridha
and became an effective way of communication between the Shias and their Imam. Imam Jawad took leadership of this organization effectively during his imamate. The Imam had selected representatives in various cities including Kufa, Baghdad, Basra, Wasit, a city in the region between Kufa and Basra, Qum, Ahwaz, Ray, Hamadan, and Bost, a city in Sistan. Historical records also indicate the expansion of Shiism into Egypt at this time. The names of 13 of the Imam's representatives are recorded in history. many of the communications between the Imam and his representatives were in the form of letters.
The Imam would respond to their questions and provide them with advice in these letters.
Dozens of the Imam's letters are recorded in history. The Imam's leadership led to the expansion of the Shia community to an extent that they could even reach top governmental positions. For instance, the governors of Bahrain and Bost were from the Shia followers of the Imam. Reaching these positions was an opportunity for them to secretly benefit the Shia community and save their wealth and lives from the persecution of the Abbasid government. Although the Imam had married Ma'mun's daughter, his affiliation with the government did not legitimize the Abbasid caliphate in the eyes of the Muslims, particularly the Shias. During the Imamate of Imam Jawad, the people of Qum, the main center of the Shias in Iran, rose up against Ma'mun's government two or three times. Their uprisings were suppressed by the government at every attempt. As a result, many were killed and the city endured serious damage.
During the government of Mu'tasim. Mu'tasim in power. Ma'mun was at war with the Romans in current-day Turkey when he suddenly became sick and died. His body was taken back towards the Islamic territory to protect it from possible disrespect or revenge by the Romans. He was then buried in Tarsus, in current-day Turkey. Prior to his death, Ma'mun had selected his brother, Mu'tasim, as his successor, instead of his sons. Mu'tasim was a warrior and an army leader. However, he lacked literacy to the point that he could not even write a letter. Ma'mun had found his brother as the best candidate to manage the ever-increasing unrest within the Abbasid government. Although Ma'mun's troops favored his son, Abbas, for the caliphate, Abbas decided to respect his father's decision and paid allegiance to his uncle, Mu'tasim. Ma'mun's army then followed Abbas and paid allegiance to Mu'tasim as the caliph. Summon to Baghdad. Once Mu'tasim assumed power, he was worried about the chaos and unrest threatening his new government. Among them was the long-standing threat of the Alawite uprising. He was also concerned about the popularity and social status of Imam Jawad. The Imam was the divine leader of the growing Shia community, which refused to accept the legitimacy of the Abbasid government. He decided to closely monitor and control every aspect of the Imam's life and isolate him from his followers. Thus, he ordered his governor in Medina to send the Imam to Baghdad. As a result, the Imam left Medina with his wife, Fazl, towards Baghdad. The Imam knew that he would not return to Medina again, unlike his prior two trips to Baghdad. Thus, he revealed his oldest son, Imam Hadi, as the next Imam to his companions. Mu'tasim pretended to be respectful to the Imam during his stay in Baghdad. However, he was carefully monitoring the Imam's life. After around 10 months from the Imam's arrival in Baghdad, an incident triggered Mu'tasim to expedite his plot against the Imam and martyred him.
A thief was brought to Mu'tasim's presence and confessed to his theft. Mu'tasim decided to implement Islamic law and cut off one of his hands. However, he did not know how much of his hand he should order to be cut off, as a long time had passed since the last time this law had been applied to thieves. He then prepared an official meeting and invited Islamic scholars, including Imam Jawad, to his presence and asked for their opinion. In this meeting, Ahmad ibn Abi Duad, who was the chief justice of Baghdad, determined the cutting limit to be at wrist by referring to the Quranic verse that describes performing tayammum or sand ablution on hands. This opinion was supported by some of the scholars. However, some other scholars determined the cutting limit to be at the elbow by referring to the Quranic verse about performing ablution, where the hands are washed at the elbows. Mu'tasim then turned to the Imam and asked for his opinion. The Imam, who was fully aware of the threats and conspiracies against himself, refused to answer and told Mu'tasim that the other opinions were enough for him. However, Mu'tasim swore that he will not let the Imam go unless he got his opinion. When the Imam was forced to express his opinion, he told Mu'tasim that all of the provided answers were wrong. The Imam then determined the cutting limit to be at the fingers and emphasized that the palm of the hand should not be cut. Mu'tasim asked for the reasoning on this ruling.
The Imam responded that the Prophet had determined 7 body parts, including both palms, which must be placed on the earth during prostration to God. The Imam then said that these 7 body parts belong to God, and if the thief's hand was cut from the wrist or the elbow, he would not be able to properly prostrate to God.
To strengthen his point, the Imam provided Quranic evidence for his claim, as the other scholars had done. He referred to the following verse of the Quran, chapter 72, verse 18. And the places of prostrations are for God, so do not invoke anyone along with God.
The word masjid
in Arabic, which is commonly translated to mosque in English, in its essence means the place of prostration. Mu'tasim liked the Imam's opinion and ordered the thief's fingers to be cut according to the Imam's opinion. This meeting finished, and Ahmad ibn Abi Duad was ashamed of his defeat in front of the young Imam. He later said he wished he had died before attending this meeting.
After 3 days, Ahmad ibn Abi Duad came to Mu'tasim and advised him that his action of accepting the Imam's opinion over that of other scholars was not a wise decision for his government. He told Mu'tasim that the Imam's followers see the Imam deserving of the caliphate and regard Mu'tasim as the one who has occupied his position. He said that the news of this official meeting has already spread in society and was strong evidence for the Imam's followers for their belief in him. This conversation triggered Mu'tasim to expedite his plot to murder the Imam. Shortly after this incident, the Imam was poisoned and murdered. Martyrdom. To implement his plot, Mu'tasim ordered one of his trusted ministers to invite the Imam to his house and offer him a poisonous meal. The Imam initially rejected this invitation. However, the minister insisted and said that he wanted the Imam to bless his house with his presence. He also told the Imam that another minister wanted to meet the Imam during this event. Due to the excessive insistence, the Imam accepted his invitation. After eating a small portion of the meal, the Imam found himself poisoned and suddenly left the minister's house. When the minister insisted the Imam stay longer, the Imam responded that it would be better for the minister if the Imam left his house immediately. Due to the hidden nature of the plot for the Imam's martyrdom, his wife Umm Fadl was also regarded as a suspect. She had a good motive since she did not have any children from Imam Jawad and was jealous of the Imam's other wife, who was the mother of his children. Also, she was from the Abbasid royal family and could have been tempted by her uncle Mu'tasim.
The Imam was martyred within a day of his poisoning, which shows the potency of the poison. He was martyred on the last day of Dhul-Qa'da in the year 220 Hijri in Baghdad. He was martyred around 10 months after his arrival in Baghdad by Mu'tasim's order. Imam Jawad was martyred at the age of only 25. He was the youngest Shia Imam at the time of martyrdom. Historical records suggest Imam Hadi's miraculous travel from Medina to Baghdad to take care of his father's rituals. He then secretly returned to Medina. A large burial was held for the Imam, as he was affiliated with the Abbasid royal family. Additionally,
Mu'tasim wanted to portray to the people, particularly the Shias, that he was innocent in the Imam's death.
A huge crowd of the Muslims attended the Imam's burial. Wathiq,
Mu'tasim's son, officially led the prayer over the Imam's body.
The crowd carried the Imam's corpse towards one of the city's graveyards that belonged to the tribe of Quraysh and respectfully buried the Imam next to the tomb of his grandfather, Imam Kadhim alayhi salam.
Conclusion.
The imamate of Imam Jawad began with the martyrdom of his father Imam Ridha when he was just 7.5 years old. He was the only child of Imam Ridha and the only heir to inherit the imamate in the eyes of the Shias. However, the Shias did not fully accept his imamate until they validated his knowledge by asking him many questions. The imamate of Imam Jawad continued for about 17 years until his martyrdom. The majority of his imamate, about 15 years, coincided with the government of Ma'mun. Ma'mun had portrayed a good relationship with the Alawites. He had selected Imam Ridha as his crown prince and later wed his daughter Habib to him. Ma'mun, who knew that Imam Ridha had a beloved son, decided to also promise his other daughter, Fadl, to Imam Jawad. He did this without the Imam's presence in Merv, while he was still a child. About 2 years later, he invited Imam Jawad to Baghdad and witnessed the Imam's divine character and knowledge. He then Islamically married his daughter to the Imam while the Imam was just 8 or 9 years old. Imam Jawad returned to Medina alone and after about 11 years came back to Iraq for his official wedding ceremony to Fazl. After a stay in Baghdad for several months, the Imam then returned to Medina with Fazl and stayed there for the rest of Ma'mun's government. Imam Jawad's imamate continued for about 2 years into Mu'tasim's government. Mu'tasim, who was worried about the social status of the Imam, brought him to Baghdad. After a short stay of about 10 months, he martyred the Imam. The unique aspect of Imam Javad's imamate was its start at a very young age. 2 centuries after the Prophet's demise, and after the imamate of 8 holy imams among the Shia community, it was now time for the Shias to fully realize the elevated status of their imams. The acceptance of the imamate of a 7.5-year-old boy, who was far younger than the Islamic pubertal age of 15, was a practical lesson for the Shias to recognize that the imamate is a position determined by God. Once the Shias verified the imamate of Imam Javad, they became proud and regarded his young age as a proof of their theology and verification of the divine teachings they had received from the previous imams. Thus, they did not later object to the imamate of Imam Hadi and Imam Mahdi, who also became imams at a very young age. Imam Javad was the first Shia imam to assume imamate in his childhood. At the age of 25, he was also the youngest Shia imam to be martyred. He is known as Javad, which means generous. He is also known as Bab al-Murad, or the Gate of Wishes. Many Muslims visit his holy shrine in Baghdad and ask God to bless them for the sake of Imam, with ease in sustenance and relief in their financial hardships. Also, the youth who visit his holy shrine feel especially connected with their young imam. Imam Javad alayhi salam. One will not regret his decision if he follows these 3 steps. Avoiding hastiness, consulting with others in the matter, trusting in God after making the decision.